Now, I'm going to change the subject again and talk to Fevzi Turkalp, editor of GadgetDetective.com, and we're going to be looking at what the big tech companies are saying now about children spending time on their devices. Fevzi, tell us more.
Yeah, so this is a story that was published by Reuters that suggests that Meta and Google are funding children's digital well-being material, and they're allying themselves with sort of trusted names like Sesame Street, the Girl Scouts, and something called Highlights magazine, which I must admit I'm not familiar with. Apparently Google has pledged at least $20 million for this, and there's some internal documentation that Reuters refer to, internal to the organisations, that say that, you know, they're thinking, how can we make ourselves look good and how can we mitigate the idea that we're making harmful products? And on its face, it's a good thing, you know, digital awareness, online safety, privacy, passwords, healthy habits online are a good thing. But there is obviously the accusation of conflict of interest, hypocrisy, you know.
So what does this involve then? They're using like Sesame Street characters and things to tell children how to use the web wisely. Is it that kind of thing?
Yeah, essentially, yes, exactly right. So they're creating materials, and then they're using these trusted sort of child-friendly organizations and brands, like, as I say, Sesame Street, Girl Scouts, etc. They're using them as the mouthpiece, as the conduit for this. And this is against the background, of course, we had that court ruling in the United States not very long ago that said that, at least in that case, that the companies were responsible for some of the harm because they had designed their products to be, let's say, addictive. So, can they do that? And there's certain analogies that spring to mind. I mean, you've got sort of the alcohol industry and the gambling industry, and both of those do run things like, you know, gamble aware and drink sensibly and all that. You sometimes see adverts for that, or a little line at the end of an advert for, you know, booze saying, you know, drink sensibly or, you know, yeah, whatever it is.
I suppose you can look at that either way, really, can't you? Either they're sort of trying to deflect from a bigger issue, or actually they're trying to do some good.
Yeah, and I don't think it has to be one or the other. I mean, as I say, that message is good, but that doesn't negate their responsibility to have a product that is safe.
And what do you think is the what is the issue for these big tech companies? Is it to do with addiction of young people? Is it to do with having a strict age control? What do you think is the problem?
The issue is that, you know, there's increasing evidence that these products are harmful and that they are designed in such a way that increases the harm. I'm not going to say they're designed to be harmful, but they're designed to maximize engagement and screen time. They often invoke negative emotions. And these are things that, you know, a court has recently upheld to be harmful and said that, you know, the companies have got some responsibility for this. It's not an accident. These products aren't the way they are by accident. They are that way because the business model means that the longer you spend staring at your screen, the more money they will make. But they're not really taking into account the harms that it can do, particularly to younger people. But I have to say, not only to younger people, we're all susceptible.
Exactly. I was just thinking that myself. I mean, you know, I can go on YouTube and I can get addicted in the sense that it's so easy to, well, yeah, I'm actually enjoying it. But there's, what about that? And then what about this one? And come on, watch this video. Yeah.
And shorts, right? All the shorts that come across on all these different platforms.
It is kind of addictive. So are we saying that there should, a bit like drink, for example, that there should be a sort of age limit where it's not fair to have something that's addictive for under 18s or under 16s or under 13s, but it is okay for me as a grown-up?
Yeah, well, you see, I think that you have to take particular care with vulnerable groups, and younger people could be considered to be more vulnerable. But but also this sort of material could be argued to be, you know, training people so that they're primed to use those products, albeit in quotes, safely, as soon as they reach the right age, and probably before they reach the right age. So I think that we just have to return to the fact that, you know, if this was a drug, you know, it wouldn't be allowed onto the market without the people producing it showing that they've done the research to prove it's safe. Right. And certainly, you know, we hope we don't have drug companies that design products in such a way that they are unsafe. So I've said this to you before. I think that the key to all of this is, instead of messing around the edges, I think certain business models should be made illegal.
Well, I was going to say, yeah. What do, in a perfect world, what would happen, and how likely is it that this could be regulated in some way?
I think it's really hard to regulate because the industry innovates so quickly that legislation, even you know, with the right people switched on and paying attention, which I don't believe we have, but even if we had all of that and we had a really effective regulator, the offering, the product keeps evolving in a way that cigarettes and alcohol just don't do, and even gambling doesn't do to the same extent. By the time you regulate one thing, you know, it'll be quite a different product by then. And we see it already. For example, we're now having to worry about, you know, the harm that AI systems may do to people, you know, that it may persuade them to take their lives or do harm to others or whatever it is. And now we're moving away from, oh, you know, we're addicted to doom scrolling, to we've got to regulate these AI chatbots in such a way.
Could there be an element, sorry to interrupt, but I was just thinking exactly that maybe AI is the next step in terms of getting addicted as well, that, you know, people want to talk to their friendly AI and they get kind of hooked and they are like a sort of a friend.
Yeah, they're in many ways preferable to people, frankly, and they're designed to be flattering and not challenging in a way, and you know it's seductive. I mean, I think I've mentioned before when I started using large language models, I thought, gosh, I didn't realize I was this smart. It took me some while to realize that every idea I had was a great idea,
Fevzi.
You know, the really funny thing about it, if you try and run a business idea past one of them and then it says it's a fantastic idea, and then you just push back a little bit and he says, you know, you're right, this is a terrible idea, and then you push back again and say, no, it's a fantastic idea, and then you know that it's really just an echo chamber for your own ego, and it's designed that way because when they train models, you've seen it, when you use a large language model, sometimes when you expect a reply, you get two alternative replies, and you're asked to choose which one you prefer, and that's because they're doing the final stages of testing a new model, and people prefer the ones that are more, let's say, self-affirming or sycophantic, perhaps. They tend to prefer those on average, and therefore it builds itself into the training, which is very difficult, because then when you try everything you know to make them be less sycophantic and therefore, I think, more useful, they can't keep it up for very long. They go back into their old ways. And then they apologize for having done so. So it's difficult, but I think the underlying point to this story is, yes, fine, let's educate people. Great that they'll spend $20 million doing it, but that doesn't give them a get-out-of-jail-free card. And I still think that the basis of this is that certain business models that rely on maximizing screen time should actually be made unlawful. There are other ways for them to make money. They could charge for their services, for example, or they could have like a freemium model where you can have the basic services for free, but the profits actually come from there. So we move from being on the menu to being the customer, right? And I think that until that happens, until we're just fodder of these beings that shed data, that they scoop up and cross-reference and target us in particular ways. I think that no amount of regulation will deal with it. I'm not saying we shouldn't regulate, and I'm not saying we shouldn't, you know, enforce the Online Safety Act and so forth, but I just think that you have to go to the core. And that's going to be a big fight. I don't think, you know, particularly because these companies are all American, that any action against them is portrayed as being un-American or anti-American. And I think that's, you know, the current administration in America is unlikely to do anything meaningful. Although I did note that the American administration has now said that it's going to check for safety all new models before they're released to the public. I'm not sure exactly how they will do that within a reasonable time frame, but on the face of it, it's better than them saying no, we're not doing anything. But you know, so you might find that there's some lag now between, you know, new models existing and being made available. But you know, that this was always the problem. You remember 3 and a bit years ago, I think it'll be 4 years in November, that, you know, ChatGPT came into, you know, the public psyche. It wasn't that other people like Google and other organizations like Google didn't have similar products, but Google were being more responsible. They were not releasing these things because they didn't think it was safe. But once OpenAI released ChatGPT, was it version 2 now? I can't even remember. It was all bets were off. And in fact, you know, OpenAI wrong-footed Google, and it's taken them 3.5 years to turn the tables on OpenAI. And now it's OpenAI running to catch up. But this starting of a sort of arms race is really dangerous, because we're building more and more capable versions of things that can do us harm.
Definitely. Now, we've just got time to mention a gadget as well, as you are the gadget detective. And you've picked out the Elgato Camlink 4K. So, what is a Camlink then? Tell us what it does.
Okay. So, it's all clues in the name. So, it's from a company called Elgato, and it looks like a fat USB thumb drive. It's not much bigger than that. But what it does is it allows you to convert any HDMI output signal. So let's say you've got a nice camera, maybe a DSLR or a mirrorless camera. It might have a HDMI output. That's a digital video and audio output.
I'm not quite sure how to help you with that.
That's so funny.
Is that Alexa answering you?
Yeah. It's funny. I'm surrounded by these machines. You know? sometimes they strike up conversations.
You
with
had Caleb worried there. He was suddenly looking around, saying, "Where's that coming from? Where's that?" But it's coming from your end.
I must have said the wake word. I changed it to something obscure, but I must have just triggered the word. Yes, I know. So what it does is it converts HDMI video, which is anything that can spit out HDMI, which is the modern way that we sort of eject video from a modern device.
It's like what you plug your TV in with.
So those are HDMI inputs. So this has an HDMI input. So it captures the HDMI. It's a capture card. And it converts it into a USB stream. So suddenly, your high-end camera, if you have one, becomes a super webcam, which is far better than even the top end any webcam you can buy. A basic mirrorless camera that doesn't sometimes cost much more than a high-end webcam can produce great images, very, very sharp, or you can change lenses and have that sort of blurred background effect without it being, you know, sometimes you see when people go on TV and contribute and they're using a digital blurred background and it looks awful as they move their heads. You can see, you know, it looks really, really unnatural around them. Well, this is doing it old school, as it were, and it allows you to have, you know, blurred backgrounds or whatever you like. But imagine taking, let's say, you know, a Sony mirrorless camera, that's what I use. There are, you know, other ones, but those ones are very popular. And then suddenly you can use it with Microsoft Teams or Twitch Stream. So if you want to do streaming or you want to do a FaceTime video call, suddenly you've upgraded your your image and sound quality hugely. You can use it to preview video on an iPad. So what you're doing is effectively giving your PC or your Mac or your iPad an HDMI input. It can display or capture or stream or record these images. And this gadget's been around for a while, and it's been much copied. You know, if you look on Amazon, you'll find loads that look just like it and have specifications that are just like it. But this thing, it just works first time, no drivers, no fuss, no drama. And a lot of the other ones that are, you know, maybe even half the price, they just tend not to work properly.
Would it also work? Sorry, to, I'm just thinking, I've used one of these things, but not as fancy as this one, I think, to plug in like my old camcorder. And actually get a digital version of old movies that I've made years ago. Would it work for that sort of thing?
No, because it's not doing, unless the camera that you're playing it back on has got an HDMI output, but HDMI is a digital standard. So for it to be spitting out a video on that, it would have had to have done an internal conversion already.
Okay.
So if you want to do that, actually Elgato do one. I mean, others do one as well, but I know Elgato do one because I bought it. And that one is, I think it's just called Video Capture, something like that. And that's for analog video. And what it allows you to do is you connect that to, say, a VHS player or your old Hi8 camcorder or whatever it is, and it captures it and it puts it in a digital format that can be played back on a computer, a PC, a Mac, an iPad, iPhone. It will do all of that. But what this does is it's taking a digital output, HDMI output, and it's turning it, it's effectively spoofing a webcam, right? So if you want to have a really high quality webcam, this is great, you know. And very often we have cameras now that have got HDMI inputs. We just never use them. We don't even know that they have it. But if it has a decent HDMI input, you just get a cable, plug it into this, and then plug it into your computer. And then what you can do is you can record it. You can stream it as a, you know, live stream or as part of a FaceTime video call or something like that. You can just view it, right? So you can do a lot with this.
Fevzi, thank you. Fevzi Turkalp, editor of GadgetDetective.com.